Congressman Ron Paul ran for president in 2008, and he is considered the most conservative member of Congress. Dr. Paul, thank you so much for speaking with us today. Now, your run for president in 2008 really catapulted you to the national scene. You were able to raise millions of dollars on the internet. Thousands of people attended your rallies. What is it about your message that really resonates so much with people all over the world, especially young people? How do you keep that momentum?
Well, you know, I usually simplify it at the rallies by saying that freedom is popular, and evidently it is, because that's what I talk about. I talk about individual liberty and American traditions, you know, our Constitution, civil liberties, but I also talk about a foreign policy that's part of that system, where the foreign policy is completely different, and young people were very attracted to that, and that is that we ought to have a strong national defense, but we ought not to be telling everybody else what to do, and we ought not to be invading countries and threatening other countries and you know, supporting different regimes and having nation building, this kind of thing. And the young people realize that they cost a lot of money, is a threat to lives, it doesn't get us anywhere, and many countries in the world right now are unhappy with us. And I think it's the personal liberties and this whole idea of a different foreign policy. At the same time, by changing our foreign policy, we probably could get back to a balanced budget much faster. And young people, I think, really like that message.
And speaking about balanced budget, you know, you're a staunch free market advocate, but many economists and analysts have said that it is that lack of oversight, that deregulation, that creates inequality and has created this economic crisis, that this type of system is to blame. So how do you respond to that?
Well, in a mixed way, because regulations of the free market is wrong and it makes things worse, and we have too much of that. But certain regulation is good, and the regulation we should have is on our monetary authorities, our Federal Reserve System, and our taxing authorities, because they overtax us. But the Federal Reserve prints all the money and they distort the markets, they cause the business cycle. So we either need to get rid of the Federal Reserve completely or regulate it to the point where it can't just print money out of thin air. And in many ways, too many of us in the United States have lost confidence in the free market and lost an understanding. And unless we go back to it, we're destined to become a much poorer country.
Well, speaking of losing confidence, you actually have a bit of a pessimistic view on how bad this economic downturn really is. You are saying that the worst is yet to come, that government spending is out of control, that big industries are just coming with their hands out for bailout money. So if this is so, you know, what are the next steps that the U.S. should take, that the world should take to recover from this?
Well, there's not a whole lot of choices. We can't maintain the status quo, and that's what's happened. The status quo has been sort of there for a good many decades, and just trying to maintain by excessive spending and borrowing and printing money, but that's come to an end because of the financial crisis. And now our choice is, do we have more government? Government ownership, bailouts, ownership by government, socialism, or we have to look at what made our country originally strong and powerful and rich, and that was freedom and the free market and civil liberties and a sensible foreign policy. So we have a major choice to be made. So as pessimistic as I am about the near term for us economically, I'm optimistic that a lot of people are still interested in our traditions and they know and understand. I don't think we'd have that tough a time if we did the right thing.
And you also, and I quote this, you said that we cannot address our budget problems at home without changing our disastrous foreign policy abroad. So can you just elaborate a little bit on that?
It's much easier politically to say, why don't we cut out all the foreign aid? Why do we get ourselves involved in wars that we don't need involved? Why do we put missiles in Eastern Europe when we don't need them and they're not going to serve our interests? They're not protecting us against anybody that's going to attack us. And we could save hundreds of billions of dollars. We would have less enemies and more friends. At the same time, we could cut those funds. We could literally support some of our programs here at home and also save enough money to cut down on our deficit. That to me makes so much sense, but you'd have to have a sea change on foreign policy. Unfortunately, leadership in both Republican and Democrat parties have been very supportive of intervention overseas. That's why I've been pessimistic about the new administration, that there will be much change in policy, even though Barack Obama has spoken more like he would like to bring some troops home, but quite frankly, he'd probably send them all to Afghanistan. And I thought we learned a lesson when the Soviets were in Afghanistan, and it didn't go well for them, and it's not going well for us. And And that's the reason I think we should change foreign policy if we want to get our house in order.
And I think that that's also one of the messages that really resonates with people as well, this sort of non-intervention. But at the same time, we're sort of living in a different age, and in an age where we have nuclear weapons, where there is terrorism, the U.S. is saying that it has implemented those policies and put certain manpower in certain places of the world to protect the American people. So how would you respond to that?
First thing is, we shouldn't make the situation that much worse. Sure, there's a lot of weapons. There's a lot of weapons in Central Asia that are floating around from the old Soviet system. The Pakistanis have nuclear weapons, and we help them get them. And yet we still put money into Pakistan. And yet, at the same time, we're bombing Pakistan. We go in there and try to root out some of the so-called enemies that we have. India has nuclear weapons. There's a lot of nuclear weapons. I was in the military during the height of the Cold War, and I thought if we got through the Cold War with the Chinese and the Soviets, and we didn't have to fight a war, we ought to be able to handle a few other countries and not make things worse. So I think we're stronger and we'll be better protected from any outside threat. There's no military might that will touch us, because we spend more money and we have a powerful military. Nobody's going to invade us or attack us, but we are threatened by terrorism. But if you don't understand why the terrorists have the motive to attack us, then we can't solve the problem. And I'm convinced that the motive is because we're over in their country doing things that we shouldn't be doing, just antagonizing them. I try to point out to other members of Congress and our citizens that if anybody did that to us, came to our country, invaded our country, and put bases in our country, we'd be fighting mad too. And people then get desperate, and their culture is such that it encourages suicide terrorism, and that's why I think we're under threat.
Okay, and switching over to the economy again, you know, what do you think of the G20 summit? Was it all for show? Was it just handshakes and hugs, or is there something effective going to come out of that meeting and any future meetings with world leaders?
Yeah, I think something will come out of it, but you probably didn't hear about it yet, because there was some pomp and ceremony that the public knew about, but behind the scenes they were talking about the future and what they're going to do and trying to internationalize all regulations, go in the opposite directions of free market, but more international regulations, and I'm sure they talked even about an international central bank. But at the same time the G20 was meeting, we also had the central banks meeting in Europe, and Bernanke was over there, and they're doing the same type of planning. So the real planning will not be out in the open until they want us to know about it. I think they realize what I've been saying, that the system that we have today, where the dollar has, the fiat dollar is a reserve currency of the world, it's losing that status, and they have to replace it. Hopefully they'll have enough sense to realize that another international agreement along Bretton Woods will be no more successful than the last one.
Which is kind of what they're promising a little bit. You know, going into it, there were these high expectations. French President Nicolas Sarkozy said, you know, this meeting cannot fail, that we need to completely restructure the financial system as we see it today. How should we expect that to happen? And should it happen? Should there be a complete restructuring of the global system?
There should be a restructuring, but not his restructuring. We could
restructure.
We could restructure by getting rid of all the central banks, and you would have honest money come up, because then nobody could commit fraud. Governments get away with committing fraud, and that's what fiat money is. But if money were developed in the private market, it would have to be backed up and promised to have a commodity behind it. But I think he was overstating the issue about coming out of that meeting. It took more than 2 years of planning to have Bretton Woods, so if they're going to have an international agreement, it's going to take a lot longer than that. But I do believe they're working on it. But if they do not incorporate commodities and less international rules and regulations, they're not going to be any more successful. They may get it temporarily successful, but it won't last.
Now, Barack Obama, you mentioned earlier, he was not at the table during the G20 summit, but he will be in office in a few months, and he's campaigned and pretty much won the election on this idea of change. What kind of change is he talking about, and what kind of change should we expect from his administration?
Just changing faces and changing party labels. Both parties represent the same special interests. They both have to represent big business. Obama's supposed to be a man of the people. Well, he collected $750 million, more money than anybody else ever collected. And Wall Street supported him, and the media supported him. All the big money supported him. So his change is not going to be much change at all. He's not talking about changing monetary policy, the Federal Reserve, or getting rid of the income tax, or bringing our troops home. He's merely mentioned one thing, and he got some benefit from it. He'd bring some troops home from Iraq, which I don't believe he will. because he didn't say he'd close down all the bases. He didn't say he'd get rid of that embassy in Baghdad that's bigger than the Vatican. But he talks about it, and he did receive some benefit. But policy will remain interventionist. We will remain in the Middle East, and we will not be coming home. We'll stay in Korea. We'll stay in Europe. We'll be in Eastern Europe. We'll be doing all these things, even though he benefited tremendously about change. But all we changed was the face of our government. We did not change any policies.
Because now we're also finding out that a lot of his cabinet is going to be ex-Clinton advisors.
Yeah, same people, and same lobbyists and same money behind this president as it would have been behind a Republican president.
Now, when he is in office, of course, the economy will be issue number one for him. But as far as dealing with foreign policy, and you did mention that there would be no change, if you were advising him on foreign policy, what would you say to him? And what is going to be his greatest foreign policy challenge? Because there are a lot of things going on. There's Iran, there's Iraq, Afghanistan, Russia. How would you advise him?
Come home. Because he's going to have to face some terrorist attack, because we have set the stage for people to be motivated to despise what we're doing, because we're always telling other people what to do. We do one of two things. We either say, you do it our way, and we'll give you money. If you don't do it our way, we'll bomb you. I would tell him, reject those two. Just try to be friends with people, talk to people, have negotiations and diplomacy.
What if that doesn't work? What steps can
he has to come home. We have to bring our troops home, save the money, change the policy. I think people will respect us, and we'll be stronger militarily. We won't be weaker. Our threats will be diminished, and we'll be stronger economically. But because we spend all this money, we're having this economic failure. That's what happened to the Soviets. The Soviets failed for economic reasons, not because we had to fight with them. And that's what's happening to us now. And this is what Bin Laden wanted us to do. He wanted us to go over and fight him on his sands and drain us, you know, here at home. And financially, he has. So we have to break up that cycle. But he's not likely to take my advice.